everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And as always, we're going to have a real talk with a real leader. Before we do that, I want to give recognition. Thank you so much to our founding partners, Hijinks Agency, 6to8 Digital, and Felicia Hall Allen and Associates. And so now for the show, folks, I am so excited for today's episode. Leo Edwards is joining us. He's our first esports guest, but I always give you guys a bit of context. So Leo is vice president and head of global partnerships for Evil Geniuses. And I met him recently at a conference. It was the Sponsorship Mastery Summit in Seattle. Our mutual friend, Chad Collins, introduced us. And Leo, you sat down and you started talking. And within minutes, I was like, this guy is amazing. I have got to have him for the show. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me, Shauna. It's a pleasure. And I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. So folks, you may be like, how in a few minutes did I know that I had to have Leo on the show? And it was just such an organic conversation. There were a lot of sports people there. As I mentioned, Chad is a recruiter. He's in the sports space. And I know, Leo, you sat down and just like organically started talking about leadership. And, you know, you are in a very visible leadership role at Evil Geniuses. Mm-hmm. So I would love to just pause and have you tell us and give the audience some context about your role and your leadership at Evil Geniuses.
Yes. So I'm the vice president and head of global partnerships. As you mentioned, I oversee Evil Geniuses revenue business from esports, which is our competitive gaming. And then we also have two different other verticals. One of them is our EGCC. That's Evil Geniuses Creative Collective, which is our studio. That's where we can create content or movies or anything. We help brands with any of their content needs or whatever the case may be. And then Factor.gg, which is our, the best way to describe it, think of it like a Bleacher Report specifically dedicated towards League of Legends and esports. So it's a way to go there and find what's going on as far as standings, stats, analytics, informational purpose articles that's related to the actual industry. So basically, overall, I see revenue from there. Leadership is something that I have been studying for like the last probably decade or so. And I think I really just started to come into my own probably in the last, I would say, 10 months. I think what happened was, I would say this summer, I went to Israel for 10 days. Was it 10 days or it was maybe eight to 10 days or whatever the case. And the time that I spent in Israel really just revealed who I am as a person. And it just kind of gave me the mindset to reinforce what I thought I was. And I think from there, it just created, like solidification as to this is why I do things the way that I do. My leadership style is, you know, some people say that they're servant leaders. Some people say that they are, they lead from the front. They talk about all those different things, right? And so, you know, when going into a leadership role, and this having been my fourth leadership position in the sports industry, I wanted to really truly hone in on building culture, building a department that is full of energy, full of fun. We can sit back and have dialogues outside of business, and it's natural, and it just comes right back to business. And it's a way to, it's no different than you having a conversation with, your friends or people that you trust or whatever the case. I would say my style is more so psychological safety. I think the reason that I adapted this is due to having been in various roles in the sports industry, having been a high performance seller, having hit targets, having delivered in essentially every position that I've been in my career. I think one thing that I lacked the most during that time was psychological safety. What I mean by that is the ability to come into a role and not necessarily know if you're going to make, you can make decisions. And if you make a bad decision, are you going to lose your job? Or every day, do you know you're going to have a job? Mm-hmm. Or you don't deliver, you know, you may hit miss your number by like making it up $1,000. Am I going to lose my job as a result? Yeah. So I wanted to build a team that was centered around psychological safety, encourage my staff to do their jobs. They know every day that they come in, they don't have to worry about their job. One thing that I'll say that I'm big on, I don't believe in micromanaging, but I'm very big on process. Mm. So if you make a mistake as a result of process, then we have to sit down and have a coaching conversation in terms of how to better do that process and making sure that we're effective moving forward. But in my industry, in my job, my role, I just want to make sure that my team, they feel empowered, they feel encouraged, they feel like they are just, you know, they're wanted. They don't have to work for Evil Geniuses. They can go take their talents and their skill set to other companies. But I think when you build that type of leadership, that leadership system that's in place, I truly believe that people will work harder for you. If you look at what I've done in my career, the people that I worked hardest for are the ones that really, they took care of me from a psychological standpoint. I did not come into this business similar to most of my counterparts. Mm-hmm. I don't look like my counterparts. Yeah. And so for me, everything was learning from the ground up. Where I come from, there's not many businessmen that were in my family. A lot of us worked either in education or worked for city, fire department, police, things of that nature. But for me, it was, if I was going to go into this industry, I wanted to do things. I wanted to be the best that I could be, but then also I wanted to learn, and I'm still learning to this day. And this is something that it really encourages me.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing all of that. And I remember you mentioned that when we first met about the psychological safety. And I think it's so important. And I think it has to do as a leader. But I also think, to your point about people don't, your counterparts don't look like you, I think that mm-hmm. psychological safety also comes in the makeup of the people that are on your team, you know? And I'm curious, and I think I know the answer to this, but when you're, mm-hmm. when you are hiring, like what are you looking for in your staff? And like that psychological safety, you know, it also has to do with that makeup of the team. Am I right?
Right. Absolutely. I think a lot of it at this point in my life, it's about your moral compass, your values, what you truly believe in your heart every day, and how you bring that to the workplace. If we don't have the same values, 9 times out of 10, it's not going to work. Right. I also believe that I work for a company that has the same values that I do. And that's the reason why I chose Evil Geniuses over any other traditional sports team that I was having conversations with during that time. It's about, you get to a point in life where it's like, and I'm just being very honest, it doesn't matter what's on your chest as far as the logo. It matters to what, you know, that company believes, how they're going to deal with you and how they're going to help you or help me get to a certain level. So when I recruit people, it's about your values. It's about your moral compass. It's about, like, I mean, just being very, if I left $30 on my table and my desk and I walked away, is that $30, you know, when I come back? Or can I trust you to make a decision and know that even if the decision isn't right, you've done it with the best intent of the organization and also of me as the leader of the department. Mm-hmm. So that's usually what I look for. When everything else, as far as skill set, as far as being able to, just normal things that other people look for, having achieved certain metrics, you know, things of that nature.
Yeah, definitely. It's so funny that you say that, because a lot of times, like when I'm talking to someone in an interview process, I'm not asking them about their skills and those kind of things, because usually that person has interviewed with several other people before they get to me. And then I'm like, well, I know they have to have those basics. So I'm right there with you. I'm asking them those deeper questions, those I'm trying to understand how they operate, how they tick. So that's great for you to share. But you shared earlier, you were talking about your journey, your evolution of your own career. And you just mentioned that it's, you know, it's clearly esports is different than traditional sports. And you had like one hell of a run in the in your traditional side of your career in sports. You had some stops at some marquee places. So would love to have you share with the audience and with me, because I didn't get the full scoop on that when we met. Kind of what's that evolution been like and what made you make that break over into esports?
So I think there's been a multiple evolutions that I've had. I think over time you evolve. If you're, you know, if you're not changing, something's wrong. If you're not finding ways to continue to learn, something's wrong. That's just me. Other same. People get stagnant, but I continue to learn. I continue to grow. Continue to develop. I don't think I'll ever stop growing and developing. I think I'll grow and develop up until my retirement days, just because the world changes every day, right? I did not know that I wanted to work in sports. That wasn't something that, well, I guess I did, but I didn't know I wanted to work in professional sports. I think if you go back and you look into my background growing up, everybody would have said I would have been a high school football coach, right? Because my uncle, who passed away earlier this year, is a legendary high school football coach in Chicago, in the Illinois High School Hall of Fame. My cousin played for the Chicago Bears. My brother played at Ball State University. Had another cousin play at Auckland State University during, I think that's like right at the end of the Steve McNair era. So when you look at it from that perspective, we grew up in a family full of like sports. Football was like life for my family. So when I went to college, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Like I got a marketing degree. What do you do? Like, so, you know, for me, it was just an easier transition to figure it out. So I did a lot of internships, four of them to be exact. Two of them weren't paid. Two of them were unpaid, and then two of them were paid. My first paycheck in professional sports came from Chicago White Sox back in the early 2000s. I knew I wanted to be in, I had interned in media, I interned in coaching, interned in marketing and sales. I thought I was going to go the sports reporter route. I interned with NBC, Fox Sports Chicago underneath Dan Jiggets and Corey McFerrin, who were the sports anchors at that time. And then I was offered a role with NBC Rockford, being a sports reporter, weekend sports reporter and slash anchor. And the job was like $12,000 a year, right? So like, how do you live off that, right? And like, I don't come from a family that we can supplement money and, you know, for other people. We have to work, we have to figure it out, we have to find a way to get things done. But I think for me, the route into corporate partnerships came because I saw what I'm a type that looks at other people. I look at other people's backgrounds, I look at what they're doing, and having done that, I saw that people that were in a sponsorship, they had the coolest jobs, they were around the biggest brands. They always had the best relationships. It wasn't transactional. It was relationship. And so I sought to get into the sponsorship side of the business. Now, my first two roles were selling tickets. That's just the natural. Either you can go the ticket route, you can go the premium route, or you can start off as a coordinator in sponsorships and then work your way up. So had to make some moves. I was the number one ticket seller with the Orlando Magic back in 2004. I think I have my MVP trophy, which love is up it. Right behind me. and so, like, I knew I wanted to be in sponsorships. And I got an opportunity with Kerry Buchholz, Randy Domain, Lynn Komorowski to start my sponsorship career in Cleveland. And I'll say this, Cleveland, they taught me this business, and I think they were the perfect people to teach me this business. I think if I had gone to another team, I don't think it would have been as dumbed down the way that I learned it. And so for me, I was able to do well there. And then I just, grew my career over time. I think as I evolved and I knew that I wanted to be in leadership, the opportunities to get in are just tough in the sports world, right? You have young people that have their connections to the presidents, the CEOs, so they're not going anywhere. And then you have people that are older, established, like myself, they're not going anywhere either because they worked so hard to get there. So I had to find my own way, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
So, and I realized that selling sponsorships and doing multi-million dollar deals, that was only a small percent of how you get into a leadership role. I know a lot of people that are in leadership roles, they haven't sold the level of what I've done in my career, right? But they knew how to play the internal politics and how to manage up. I think for me, I'll be very honest, my growing curve in the last 3 years is how do you manage up? It's not how you manage down. I mean, managing down is easy, right? So it's just making sure that I give my CEO enough information to where when she's in a board meeting, she doesn't get blindsided by anything with my department. That's my job. If I do her wrong, I've done a bad job. So that's a small percent of it. I think over time, I just took people's advice. I worked hard. I went into non-traditional sports. I was in NASCAR for about 5 years. I met some amazing people there that are still good friends to this day. Then eventually went into hockey. I was in hockey for 8 years, NBA for 8 years, both leagues, three different teams. And then I was given advice on like just how do I get to the next level? Because I think we all aspire to get to the next level, and it's tough. And I know for me, it probably was a little bit more harder, given the fact that, and I'm not measuring my level compared to others, but I know for me, when you look at my career, I've been at all levels of the organization, from four-time intern all the way up manager, director, senior director, VP, and even in my vice president role, I'm basically reporting directly to the CEO and managing all budget, strategy, go to market, anything from hiring, coaching, handle all expenses, everything from that perspective, right? So, like, for me, I received some advice from a good, well, I call him a good friend, and we don't talk often, but he said, "Leo, you need to do this." And I'm like, "There's no way I can do that. There's no way. Like, you're really not speaking logical, right?" He said, "I think you should go to Harvard, and I think you should get a degree in finance." He said, "That'll separate you from other people in the industry. They're just marketers. You're not just a marketer. You can learn a different functionality. You'll learn business, and then you'll have that name that'll carry you the rest of your career." And I did not realize. I was like, "Okay, let me try it." I didn't tell him that I was going to school or trying to do it. I honestly didn't think that I could do it, right? Like, that's just not, I didn't think I could do that. Like, I'm being very honest. So, but I'm also the type of person that, I'll try something. If it doesn't work, then it's no different than any company that's working on their marketing plan. If a marketing ad or a campaign doesn't work, you pivot and you try something different until you figure out, your flow and what makes sense, and then go from there. So in 2017, I started to go back to school, learn finance. And the pandemic hit, and then I was able to take a lot of classes because I was working from home. I wasn't really out in the community in a lot of meetings, and I wasn't, having dinners till late at night. And so I was able to take a lot more classes and really finish up quicker than what was intended. As a result of going to Harvard, I think that's how me and Nicole LaPointe Jamison met, right? I'll be very honest. She's a private equity person. She is strictly about the money. She goes in, stress assets, inherit them, grow them, make them better than what they are. That's what she does. And so I think for me and my conversations with her, I was able to speak the lingo that I did not necessarily know before I went to school, right? So, why esports? I think it was one, it was Nicole LaPointe Jamison that really intrigued me. I love seeing what she's doing. She's young, diverse, and also the CEO. And so you don't see that amongst any professional sports teams. Also, esports, traditional sports, it's all the same thing. We all do the same thing. So, but for her, it was a matter of like, hey, she needed me to come over and let's make this business come almost similar to traditional sports. And I think for me, it was also, I just needed to learn something different. I just got through learning a lot, and I didn't really know esports as well as I do now. I worked in it previously with HBSC, with Dignitas, and 76ers GC. I sold a couple sponsorships for those teams. But I think for me, I wanted to try something different. I wanted to learn something. I love the startup component of the business. And I also wanted to build something that can transcend over time. And I think when you're doing something at more challenging than, all the other challenging brands that I work for, they're marquee brands, but I've never worked for, excuse me, they're challenger brands. I haven't worked for a marquee brand like your Lakers, your Yankees, your Cowboys. We've still done some really good successes back then. I wanted to kind of take that same success and do it here. And we're starting to see it. Things are turning around. I'm really proud of what we've done in the last 8 months.
Yeah, it's incredible to hear the way that you talk about that. And I love your commitment to growth, that commitment to always challenging yourself. And it's funny when you mentioned the part about when the person that you talked to said you can be more than a marketer. And that was a turning point. The same concept was a turning point for me in my career that got me into partnerships. Because similarly, someone, Matt Pizzeris at the time was my boss, and he said to me, like, if you're a marketer, you're spending money all the time, and so and I was just actually telling someone who's working with me now that when you are in a growth role, when you are deal making, it changes the game, I think. And I just thank you for all that you've shared, because I think sometimes people look at someone like you and your career, and you've gotten to that level, and they can make assumptions or have no idea how you got there. So that's part of what I really love when the guests will openly share as you have, so that people get a sense for how hard you've worked and you've taken risks and you've really pushed yourself to continue to grow. So I just, again, like, I really thank you for sharing with us as much as you
I
have.
think when I before I moved here, and this is a conversation that I'm gonna mention his name, Adam Davis. He always brings this up when he talks to people, he tells me about it. And so I remember when I was interviewing to move to the market, HBSC. It's hard going from market to market and then starting over, right? The hardest part is, you don't know the people in the market. You don't know who the decision makers are. You have to now figure out where the money is. You have to That is very, very hard, and it's draining at times, right? And I've done that between Cleveland, Charlotte, Orlando, Phoenix. And so when I was coming into this market, I sat down with Adam maybe like I called him like maybe six, seven times, and he was a CRO at the time, just to have a conversation like, okay, is this really what it is? And is this what the expectations are? And I want to just, talk through it again. I wanted to make it in my I wanted to make the my mind the decision that I knew I could do it once again, because having success in so many markets, as I said, it takes over. And I was starting to get older, and I'm like, do I really want to do this over again? But it was the best move for me moving to this market, and it hands down was the best move I made.
Yeah. And I think that what your point about when you make moves in your career and you're in the sports industry, you do a lot of times that means you're moving from place to place to place. And so I'm glad that you shared that because it is really hard to start over, not only personally, but also those relationships. Because a lot of those people who are really successful sellers, it's because they've been in a market really for a long, long time, you know? And so I remember actually at the conference, Laura Day, that was one of the things that Mika said about her, the two from the Minnesota Twins, and that part of Laura being so successful is because she's been there in that market her entire career. So, you know, there's the pluses and minuses of moving around, and that's a lot of the way that we've all moved up and around, because I had my own tour of duty that I did when I was, you know, in the sports industry. And so there are just some realities that come along with it. Like you were saying earlier, your first job was like, you know, or the, I don't know if you said you took the job or not, but they had an offer for like $12,000 a year. And I
Oh, I
kind
didn't
of
take
laughed.
it.
I kind of laughed
I
when you said it because I thought back to the early start of my career and like, good Lord, the amount of years that I was making like $30,000, $35,000 a year. And you're like,
It was better for me to take a fourth internship with the Chicago White Sox, my first like real paid internship, and
yeah.
make 13,000 and stay at home versus go make 12,000 and have to figure out how to, to eat.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think it's, I don't really know if it's how much it's like that now, but gosh, when I was coming up, I'm sure when you were coming up, it's like the opportunities came and you just jumped because that's what you wanted to do. But there, you know, it was hard. It was really hard, especially in that whole, you know, like how much are you going to pay me? Just like, no question. You just kind of jumped on it. So, but so now you're in this esports realm, and I've done a bit of rabbit holing recently, you know, even more in the esports space. And so I've become more aware of some of the trends and but I would love for you to talk about that a bit. And I know specifically with you and your landscape right now, you know, I know what I've read was something about like, you know, analytics are really important in your space and specifically your company. And you mentioned it earlier. I also know that just in general, there's such a commitment to women and minorities in the esports space. So I'd just love for you to talk a bit about those things and how they show up in your business now.
I mean, that's everything that we do. That's like the core of our DNA at Evil Geniuses. You think about gaming is historically white men. It isn't always in the most safest place. When you think of that perspective, given the level of banter and trash talking that comes with being on a headset and being in a gaming environment. One thing I can say about EG, we have about 30% women fans. We're the first esports organization to have a co-ed team. So we have women and men playing on the same team. We have an all-women's team as well, which is the first that has been done. When it comes to DE&I, I mean, it's a part of our DNA. It's a lot of brands can come authentically talk to us because we know what we're doing in that regard, versus like having to figure out whether or not should they go this direction, should they go that direction. Well, we can tell you or coach you in a manner in which you know exactly, what you're doing. From there, esport, like all of our different partners that we have from an analytics standpoint, HPE, which is our one of our major partners, they help us with our gaming components. So think of it like with, the NFL, NBA, analytics is key in terms of trying to win, right? Well, we've been able to take the analytics and find homegrown talent in North America and have really done well to take that talent and to win with it, right? We won the 22 Spring Split Championship, and then also qualified for Worlds, which is hard, So to do that is amazing. And to do that within the last 8 months, then you think about, more than doubling revenue over the course of the last 8 months. You think about winning our first Sports Business Journal Award from a business standpoint in the last 8 months, having been accepted into the Valorant program, which was a very intense process that allowed us to now have additional opportunities for revenue, but also being the biggest games. You look at EG from a whole, we're the only esports team that has teams across North America, Europe, and China. And you think about what we've done in China from a marketing perspective, our Weibo account has over 1 million followers, right? Like, we just crossed that within the last couple weeks. So there's a lot of heightened focus on EG in terms of the direction and where we're going. It's my goal to sit down, have a conversation, and to see if there's any way we can help you with growing your business through our fans. No different than what I was doing in traditional sports. But the thing is, right now, everything's from a digital standpoint. We do have assets that are marketable from a tangible, which is our jersey kits, everything across the jersey, but everything else is done digitally. We also love to get the EG's name out into the marketplace through unique promotions and things of that nature. So we have the same kind of core assets in many different ways. They're just different, but they're still the same. Mm-hmm. But our IP is definitely big, and there's an opportunity to really, take this even further as we continue to grow. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I love how when you started talking about that, you said you want to sit down with that brand and understand mm-hmm. how you can impact their business. And so, again, I think that is so much of a shift, I think, that's happened in sponsorship in general. I think in partnerships, mm-hmm. truly the word partnership. But that's been a huge shift. And still to this day, some people do it more authentically and more sincerely than others, So your head is definitely in that partnership space. And clearly with all, as successful as you've been, you're making that happen. So for mm-hmm. if the audience is listening, and help us understand, who are, from a brand perspective, who are you for and who are you not for?
Who are we for? What do you mean by that?
Meaning like if the brand, if someone's listening for a brand, it's like if say it's like Nestle or LaCroix or something mm-hmm. like that, from a brand perspective, who are the types of brands that would fit and who are the types of brands that don't fit?
Any brand that is looking to target the gaming space as far as your up and coming next clients, that's who we want to talk to. You look at esports, well, specifically our fans, our average age is 25. College graduated, tech savvy, smart. You look at NFL, NBA, MLB, and I'm missing one, NHL, I said that one. So all four of them, they're 40 plus, right? We have the youngest demographic, the hardest demographic to target. But we have the keys to it because we know how to target them. You look at the young Gen Zs, they don't like to be marketed to. They have 70% of them have ad blockers on their phone. But what they're into content, not in a long form, long form stance. So the days of, watching television for 3-4 hours at a time, one show, that's not what they're doing. They may be watching 3 or 4 hours at a time, but there's multiple different things going on within that 3 to 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And usually it's within a 2 to 3, maybe 4 minute type of breakdown. They'll know what's going on with the game. They may not necessarily watch the entire game, but they know exactly what they broke it down and received the highlights. Mm-hmm. So we want to talk to brands who want to target young, hardcore, avid, demographic that they're having a hard time reaching. Yeah. Some of our major partners, you look at LG, Hewlett Packard Enterprise, Secret Lab, Chevron, who we will be announcing within the next week, which is signed, so I can definitely talk about that. and then you look at it from that, because Monster Energy, which is our longstanding partner that we've had for about a decade. So we have some really great opportunities for brands to really do something in a space that they need to talk to, because if they don't, you'll be neglecting your next customer.
Yeah. The way that you talked about and you described, it's not just content, it's short form content. So I think if people are listening, and they're interested, whether you're at a brand or you're representing a brand, it is truly that the brands that are willing to go to that next level, not just saying, oh yeah, we have social media accounts or we put out some content. It's that the brands that are going to push themselves to go to that next level. And I think that it's that constantly evolving element of content that you all are doing. So a brand that can actually keep up that pace, I think, becomes important. So if someone's going to step to the table, they realize what they're in for.
And I always say, and this is just being honest, if you're marketing, if you're spending dollars in one of the major four, continue doing that. That's not, we're not competing with that. You should be doing that as well because those are your customers, but you also should be talking to us because we have your next customers. So you don't want to neglect that because the actual brand that actually chooses to speak to them are the ones that later on are going to see the success.
It's so important, I think, this part of the conversation that we're having, because I think like so many, whether it's a brand or it's a league, are facing that aging out challenge. And I love what you said, like don't stop spending there, but also continue, come over here, because again, it's like if you're only spending there, you're going to age out. You're already aging out. So I'm really glad that we had this part of the conversation. I think it's something that again, people get perplexed by, and so it's great to know that this is the avenue, definitely helps you get there from a brand perspective. So you have hit so many topics with us today, and I'm so glad that you spent time with us. You talked about your career evolution, your personal evolution, which I think is it's awesome. And I love your awareness of your own growth. And I had a guest on one time who said, if you stop growing, you stop living. And I think that that was a sentiment that you gave. And so I truly honor that part of yourself. And so one thing I like to do as we wrap up these conversations is ask guests, for the people who have listened, and because we hit so many different topics, if there's one or two takeaways that you hope that people have from our conversation today, what would those be?
I that's a great question. I think one, there's somebody that's looking at this right now that looks like me. You can be where I'm at and then some. You just got to think a little differently. You have to bring it all together, and you have to have a no quit attitude to try to figure it out, because it's not easy. But once you get there, it'll be great. I think that's one thing I want to say. And I think the other thing is, leadership comes in many different forms. One thing that I've learned over my career, everyone's a leader, right? And just because you have a vision of what that leader may look like, doesn't mean that that's always the right person for you at that moment. You may have to take a little bit of a chance in order to achieve the level of success that you want for your company or for your business or for your team.
So true. So such great takeaways. Thank you so much for sharing them. And again, thank you for coming on today. So
Thank you so much.
let you get back to everything. And everybody, thanks so much for tuning in, and have an awesome day.